It is Thursday afternoon. It is the Daily on Talk Radio Europe. And at this time of the week, normally Dave would be chatting to Richard Fitzwilliams. And that's exactly what I'm going to do right now. And Richard is on the phone. Richard, good afternoon. Nice to have your company this week on the programme.
And good afternoon to you. And it's been a very memorable time here. We've had, of course, royal news last week, which occupied me most certainly, nearly 50 interviews, and also promoting an art show for the Royal Society of Portrait Painters, which was my big promotion for the year. So a very, very busy time indeed.
And would the 50 interviews or so in relation to the royalty, would that have anything to do with the little baby?
That is precisely what it had to do with. And indeed, there were several news stories, as you know, attached to it, and a very joyous, though strangely handled, occasion, and certainly if we had a post for Mother's Day, there's no doubt at all that we will see what we will see in the coming weeks, but there's no question that Harry and Meghan celebrated very privately, but there was a lot of rejoicing overall, and there's no question that their reach is most particularly international. I think that is absolutely clear now. Mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking that my next question to you was in relation to those interviews. How many countries did that involve?
Oh, I mean, a lot of them were from New Zealand television. I'll be doing Austrian television on Thursday. It was a tremendous amount with the BBC, because there was BBC Ulster, Wales and Scotland, which constitute, of course, the United Kingdom at the moment. Heaven knows what could happen.
Yes.
And indeed, there was RT in Ireland, so there were several countries involved. The aspect of it that for the first 2 hours I was doing Canadian television wall-to-wall because that was the arrangement. The whole point was that we didn't know, of course, when the baby was going to arrive, but Buckingham Palace had announced that they would let us know when Meghan went into labour. The announcement that actually came was hours afterwards, and that she had gone into labour when the baby had in fact been born that morning on Monday at around about 5:30, which was a very curious way to handle things.
But don't they seem to be handling things ever so slightly differently than has been handled before? They seem to be giving themselves a little bit of space, because that would give them the opportunity. I mean, previously when you know, Diana or when William's wife would have gone into labour or whatever, you would have had journalists sitting outside waiting and waiting and waiting. And then every hour on the hour, you'd have BBC News or Sky News saying, there's no word yet, there's no news yet. So I think it was to avoid that and for them to allow themselves to enjoy the first hours of the baby's birth, maybe the baby's life.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right, and I think they were absolutely right to do that, because obviously William, for example, was going to be the future king, as was George, and therefore that was one of the reasons the Linda Wing photo opportunity became a tradition. It does, however, I think, stretch it not to announce the name of the hospital, for example, where the baby was born. It seems to me to be stretching the secrecy somewhat. We will see what we will see, but it's certainly been a joyous occasion, and there's no doubt at all that the photograph of the Queen and Prince Philip with Mother Doria and the happy couple and just visible, young Archie, what a name, good heavens, mine were all wrong, every one of them were wrong. That is iconic, and it will be up there with the royal photographs. There are quite a number which go down in history, from Queen Victoria's in 1894, the famous one of four generations of the royal family. So indeed, a lot of history in the last week.
Indeed. How many of them have you met?
I've met several, the Queen, the Duke of Edinburgh, some of the so-called minor royals. Sometimes do. It's a matter of probably if you go on tours with them, which is not something that I've done. That is the time when you tend to meet them.
Course.
And, of course, if you are a correspondent for a national, which, of course, I am not, there you would go to a great deal more of the press calls. I go to some of them. And certainly we have Trooping the Colour coming up, and also I shall be seeing them at Royal Ascot. But that will be in the distance, whether Meghan will wear. It's interesting, she and Harry went on the first year of their marriage. William and Kate took several years, but Meghan wore Givenchy in homage to My Fair Lady, Audrey Hepburn's colours.
The things you know, it's incredible. Let's talk about movies, shall we? And the first movie, Richard, that we're going to talk about, or that you're going to talk about, is a movie called Us.
Yes, indeed. The spelling, of course, is, or has been interpreted as being U full stop, yes. S full stop, as though it were America in microcosm. This is a very curious movie. I do have to admit, and listeners must bear with me, that when it comes to horror films, I am irredeemably squeamish.
All right.
Therefore, there was a lot of this film that I looked at through parts of my fingers.
Are you a scaredy cat?
Hide part at least of what was on the screen, because it is extremely scary. This is Jordan Peele, and this is Jordan Peele indeed in ferocious form. The first scenes is set in the 1980s. Young Adelaide Thomas wanders off on a beach and encounters a duplicate of herself in a hall of mirrors when she goes into what she thinks is going to be a fun fair.
Right.
That leads to her feeling traumatized and her parents consulting a psychologist. That is a scene that has very, very substantial meaning for what happens climactically in the film. Then we have a jump to the present. And here we've got a now adult Adelaide. She's married to Gabriel, and the Wilson family are heading, two children, Zora and Jason, to their family beach house. She only too vividly remembers the incident, which of course was by the beach, and she doesn't really want to go, but Gabe is anxious to impress his white neighbors, and he purchases a boat as well, and he thinks it's going to be fun. What happens, in fact, is that a family of four identical to them appear in the driveway.
Oh.
Furthermore, they attack. It's tough viewing.
Now, when you said they attack, the people that look like them who appear in the driveway attack them.
Absolutely.
No each, such thing as, can I have a bowl of sugar? It's just attack.
It quite literally is attacking different ways.
Wow.
They're all doppelgangers. They're all, you could say, almost as though they were counterparts, or they're known as the tethered. And when you're attacked by your, so to speak, tethered duplicate, unpleasant and horrible things happen. Jason, for example, has a tethered duplicate called Pluto, who wears a white mask and does particularly horrible things.
Right.
Adelaide has a counterpart who tethers her quite literally with handcuffs, and subsequently a whole variety of bizarre, ghastly and weird things happen. Some of them escape, and do they escape for long? And what happens to their neighbours? They were so anxious to impress the Tylers, mm-hmm. played by Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker. We have Lupita Nyong'o, an excellent actress. She plays Adelaide, and her tethered character is Red. She's married to the amiable Gabe, played by Winston Duke. His tethered doppelganger is Abraham, and Shahadi Rice Joseph is Zora, or Umbre, and Evan Alex is Jason, or alternatively the masked Pluto. It's a scary movie. I think the only way of handling a review of it is, of course, to let the viewer, if they are attracted by a film that does scare and is full of symbolism, it's almost too full of symbolism, because everything that happens links to America, its past, its present, who knows, its future,
okay.
But also the fact that it's particularly creepy. So it works both on the basis of horror and a good many of the metaphors. Some of them are obvious. There are rather a lot of them, I would add. A movie that, putting it mildly, keeps you on your toes.
Uh-huh.
And a film that, I can't say where it goes, but it certainly explains the rather strange beginning. And it's a portrait of a society that is oppressed and quite literally shackled.
Ah, okay. Interesting. And I was wondering where you were going with the whole, you know, US at U.S. I can understand it and see it now. Are horror movies as popular now as they were in the 1970s, particularly in the early 80s when they were huge?
Well, I think the answer to that must be yes, because, I mean, we've had, for example, Hereditary, which did very well. We've had the Blair Witch series, which I was finally prevailed upon to watch. I know there's a festival of them. There is an audience that's tailor-made for them, and whereas I would certainly not claim it either as mainstream or especially large, it's always been there. So it's interesting. In the very week we were discussing a horror movie, Doris Day's passing. I mean, there was somebody who I have to say I had absolutely nothing in common with the brief clips that I saw of her films and kept at a distance, and yet she had this vast number of people who admired her from afar and found her sort of anodyne humor in a string of bizarrely superficial comedies, absolutely fascinating. So, I mean, there is an audience for all sorts of movies. There's no question, if you look at Avengers Endgame, for example, where the major audience is centered now to bring in the mega bucks, and that is the sci-fi.
Yes. And we're kind of going to sci-fi now, but not in the same way. We're going to talk about space, aren't we?
We're going to talk about, Vox Lux.
Yes.
And this is a show, again, that packs a punch. I find it absolutely riveting. However, I do have to tell listeners that there's a device in it which is so central to the plot and so intriguing, it works, in my view, that it mustn't be revealed in a review. You simply must come across it.
Oh, yes.
So, whereas I will be mentioning some members of the cast, I will not be mentioning all of them for a purpose. We meet young Celeste, a 13-year-old, played by Raffery Cassidy, and she becomes a music prodigy when she survives in 1999 a ghastly incident at her school, together with her sister Ellie, played by Stacey Martin.
Mm-hmm.
When she sings at the memorial service, and subsequently she's able to transform into a pop star with the help of her manager, played by Jude Law, the meteoric rise most particularly happens, coinciding with the fact that when 9/11 makes the sort of music that she produces popular, it catapults her into a superstardom, national and indeed on a global basis. But here comes the fascinating aspect of this movie, because we skip many years to 2017.
Right.
We meet the adult Celeste. Did you ever see Natalie Portman, who plays her in Black Swan?
Yes, I did.
I'm putting it mildly, memorable, you would agree?
Yes, wholeheartedly.
Absolutely. There are echoes of this that character in the monstrous creature who has become, putting it mildly, again, she's a superstar, but this is a star who firstly needs a comeback after a dreadful incident which has almost destroyed her career. She has a new album which is called Vox Lux. She's the mother of a child, Albertine, who plays a particularly significant role in this film.
Okay.
More I am not saying. And also she's addicted to drink, drugs, and behavior that's so utterly scandalous that her sister's still part of a team. She's still got the same manager, played by Jude Law, and also Jennifer Ely plays Josie, the publicist, and both extremely well. Willem Dafoe is the narrator. Parts of this film are narrated, and it gives you an insight into the cost of celebrity and what it actually involves, with some very, very clever twists along the way, especially in the casting.
It sounds like there's a lot to watch and a lot not to miss in that. It appears that if you take your eye off it, you might miss things.
Well, in fact, you make a very good point, because I saw it during the time when I was on Royal Baby Watch.
Ah, you can't be doing that, Richard.
Well, what happened was I was downstairs at the cinema, and of course, you see, you can't spend 2 hours without recourse to your mobile, but in the cinema, you can't naturally, it would be disturbing.
Yes.
So I had to do a couple of quick run-ups just to make sure that there'd be no happy arrival that I hadn't been informed of. And to time it during a film like this was, I can only say, hell on earth, because it is a very macabre film. It does have touches of Black Swan. It is very gripping, and it is full of superb performances, including Natalie Portman in, as the role, where, frankly, the fact that she's almost been destroyed by criminal behavior, contrast that with her hideous behavior to her family, it is quite extraordinary. And you could say the film's about the price of fame and how it twists lives and turns people into monsters, that there have been so many of them. I mean, we recently saw a film about White Crow, about Rudolf Nureyev, and that was his earlier days before he became demonic. He was a very different character, but he did apparently become absolutely grotesque. Films about this are quite commonplace, but it's this one, especially given the aspect of casting that I have referred to, but not detailed. Again, this is a movie just like Us, but totally different, of course. You certainly can't relax, and to choose a moment to check by mobile was not easy.
All right. Well, listen, it sounds like you've had a very hectic week. I'm just glad that we got to review the two movies that you said, because I know you have a habit of saying we're going to review this and then you don't do it, because I heard Dave talking about that recently.
I have, from time to time, you know, when you look at which movies you're going to be reviewing, sometimes this has happened. It has happened occasionally, you're right. Don't go to particular screenings, and having the flexibility sometimes can be important. The main thing is, of course, to have the two movies at the end of the week, which are reviewed, and next week I can announce that have been reviewed, and will be reviewed, should I say. Firstly, is Tolkien. I'm sure many are listening, fans of Tolkien. If so, beware of this movie. And secondly, Claire Denis, whose Arrival was so highly touted, High Life, a movie which is certainly an unusual one. They will be reviewed.
Well, if Dave is listening on his holidays, there is a very good chance that next week you and Richard will be reviewing Tolkien and High Life. Richard has been.
And I ought to say that Dave and I always give the marks to the movie.
Oh, sorry, yes.
So I would suggest that I would give Us 4 stars, and I would give Vox Lux 4.5 stars.
Oh, wow. Excellent. All right. Well, Richard, on that, can I say thank you for joining us this week? It's been a pleasure talking to you. And next week, you should be back cradled in the safe arms of Dave Hodgson again on the radio.
The baby metaphor is hilarious.
Good luck and thank you. Bye-bye, Richard.
Thank you.